everyone, it's your host Matilda,
Hadiza,
and Imama,
and you're listening to the Africa Lipso podcast. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Africa Lipso podcast. We are once again joined by a special guest today. We are joined by Coin Sadi Ademusu. I always ask, did I pronounce that right?
You pronounced the first name right.
How is the last name wrong.
It's pronounced Ademusu.
Ademusu. So the S and the second one has the shish.
Okay.
Cool.
I should actually be ashamed because I'm
Question,
Yoruba.
Is this a dialect thing? Like, are there certain Yoruba dialects that pronounce the sh versus this S?
Oh, no, Yoruba has s and sh.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I remember that from... Yes, we did do Yoruba in school.
Alphabeti, is it Ede Yoruba?
Ede Yoruba, yeah.
That's the only thing I remember.
But yes, so Coin Sadi is the CEO and principal architect at Seven Space, and he's also the creative director at Homey, which is a division at Seven Space. Hey Coin Sadi, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So we do this thing, at least we've been doing it throughout the season, where we're asking everyone how the pandemic has been or is for them, because, you know, with the emergence of Omicron,
Omarion,
we know we've not gone anywhere yet. So how has it been really for you?
I'm just going to give the very, very short answer. I think the pandemic was a combination of two things. One, very, very depressing and sad because other things were happening in my life. But secondly, I think that there was a lot of discovery. So because of the internalization, I was forced to, I guess, tap into certain parts of myself that I wasn't doing. So I started painting again, started sketching again, started drawing, writing. So a bunch of things that started happening. So good and bad.
I forgot you're an architect, so you're definitely artsy. I was going to be like, oh, you paint. And I was like, oh, no, that makes sense, actually. Would you say you're an introvert or an extrovert? Because I feel like the two groups handled it differently.
I'm an introvert.
I
would say so.
Okay.
I handle social situations well.
Okay.
When I have to, but I would rather just stay indoors.
Okay. Mm. So then it was good for you then?
Yeah, on the lockdown part, that was not the problem. It was just other life things.
Other life things, yeah, definitely. Mm.
Cam?
All right. So the main reason we thought of this topic, and we'll get into it more about what Coin Sadi does and what his company does, but I think what really made us think about this topic is the housing crisis really in Nigeria in general, but mostly in the urban cities. I was really unable to find an exact number because I think Nigeria does bad with statistics in general.
Yep.
Yeah.
80%.
80%. Oh, so we have this joke on the podcast where when Nigerians lack data, we just say 80%
of... We just say 80% of whatever it
whatever.
Is.
Whatever. So 80% of Nigerians are unhoused. Okay, but that's not the fact. But
Actually, you don't know, right? Because we actually don't have the stats around it.
I mean, but there are numbers, though.
There's
numbers,
yeah.
Yeah, the estimated number is, in terms of not people, but in terms of numbers of houses required, is between 20 to 22 million.
Yeah.
Wait, in the whole of Nigeria or in just one state?
No, in the whole of Nigeria. So the estimation is that each house would house at least 5 people. And so the numbers are sort of derived from that.
Yeah.
So over, like, let's say, like, 100 million minimum Nigerians are unhoused. Interesting. Yeah.
It's interesting because the numbers haven't really, well, I mean, they've gone up by 80 million. Like, you said 200 million? 800 million?
No, I think million? You said 22, right?
22
million. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I have this table that said in the 1991 to 1993, we were at a housing deficit of 4 to 7 million. So we've increased that by 2.
Well, plus. I mean, our population has also skyrocketed. Yeah. So there's also that. But I know, like, I just kind of looked up Nigeria's population. I think we're about like 200 million. So I guess yeah. half of the population is yeah. So based on that, it'll be half of the population. But actually, Matilda, I didn't finish introducing the topic. Sorry, we just kind of
No. These conversations are so important, and like I think the figures, especially because you work in that space, Kansadi, I feel like you definitely know more about like the estimated statistics. But it's just crazy also that there's also empty houses. In, I can speak to Lagos anyways, like apparently yeah. there's a high number of empty houses, even though there's a seemingly big housing deficit. We see it every day, like even the Ikoyi building that just went down,
yeah.
RIP to everyone, but it's made for very rich people. Imama talked about how much those units were going for. You have all these big projects going on, and like you're like, yeah. who even is this project for? Because like half of the over half, in fact, most of the population is living below the poverty line. So yeah. it's just like, who exactly are those houses for? So we found Koinsade via like a video on YouTube. You were on Tayo Aina's YouTube, right?
Yeah, that was
the first time I ever saw anything like what your company does in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think the tiny house movement generally is all over the world. And like
yeah.
there's...
Yeah.
Yeah, one of our friends is really into watching those videos, so she used to show me that. But then yours was the first I saw in Nigeria. So I'll just hand it off to you to let us know what exactly your company does.
Okay. So because we're speaking about housing, I'll just jump straight into the product, which is Homey. Homey essentially is a housing product that is designed to basically do a number of things. One, ensure that we can manufacture houses very quickly, which means that the eventual plan is to get us to being able to manufacture on an assembly line. Secondly, to provide houses that are affordable. I'm careful about the word cheap, so I would use affordable. And affordable by a number of means, so not just necessarily by direct financing, but credit and other things. And then the last thing is to provide a home that sort of represents a friend, in a sense. So to answer the question whether I'm an introvert, yes, I am. So I think about it as designing something that's so functional and simple that it allows you to, interact with the space as though you've had it forever. It's to give a sense of pride to people who otherwise will never be able to afford a home.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to provide that alongside the technology that we would use, I think is the eventual plan with Homey. But on a bigger scale, Seven Space, which is the parent company of Homey, is an architectural company that covers the general range of architectural practice. So everything from design to renovation to interior architecture. So we do all of that.
Oh, I was wondering the distinction between Homey and Seven Space. So yeah, okay.
Question. So are you doing, because I mean, I guess the ads, or should I say what I've seen on media is more the quote unquote container homes, but do you do like when you say you want to create homes in an assembly line, are you doing other types of, or do you have plans for other types of prefab homes, like with other materials?
Yes, definitely, actually. So the one that you saw on Tayo Aina's page is our second prototype.
Okay.
The first prototype was not a container. The first prototype was actually a flat-packed house that I had designed and had built in China. But obviously, shipping costs, production costs, it wasn't feasible.
Right? Sorry to cut you, but if you could just explain to us non-architecture people what a flat-packed house is.
Okay. So I had designed a house that essentially could be shipped in a container. Right. And okay. So when it arrives, you just open it up, you take out the walls, you assemble the walls, you assemble the windows, and basically can build it yourself. That was the plan, with an instruction manual. Okay. So that's where we're going back to. But the idea is to figure out a way that we can do that cheap, local. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important to do it local. And then we have, you know, just long-term plans of taking advantage of certain loopholes that our environment provides. So, for example, we have situations where, I'll use Lekki Phase 1 as an example in Lagos. We have situations where in about the whole of Lekki Phase 1 and further down, there are almost about 200, 300 empty plots of land. They're all owned, but they're empty, which means that the owners have not yet decided what to do with them or don't yet have the capital to do the development.
Mm.
Now, because our homes are movable, the container homes are movable, they are easily assembled, which means that rather than buying land, we can lease land for a longer period of time, which means that so we go into the urban areas because that's where the young people want to live, closer to the city. Lease these plots of land from these landowners for maybe 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and deploy these units on the land that allow people to live in the city at an affordable cost. And the advantage of that is our development cost is reduced. So if you buy a plot of land for 100 million, you can lease that same plot of land for about 5 million.
Oh.
So it's a really different dynamic, and we're hoping to be able to penetrate that area of the market.
So how do you, let's say you're leasing a plot of land, do you already have people who are willing to live on that plot of land? Do you lease per, like, who is available to stay on that land, or do you pre-lease, like, you already have some, you're leasing, like, you're already on a subscription?
Yeah, so I understand exactly what you're saying. Okay. I think the truth is we haven't succeeded at all our plans yet. Nigeria is a very interesting place.
Yeah.
So the idea is we currently have a waiting list of about, I think it's about 1,200 people.
Oh.
But there's a challenge to the waiting list. These people who are on the waiting list are not people who can afford to buy our houses. Our houses are selling currently about $20,000, right?
Okay.
They can't afford to buy it, but they can afford to live in it on a lease.
I see.
Right? So we are trying to bridge the gap between financing, which means get somebody to offset the cost of production, right? So that these people can live in it.
Okay.
So I don't know if that answers your question. So we do have a waiting list, but we don't have a waiting list of people with the capital.
With the capital. So is there some kind of mortgaging option? Like, are these people, when these people are, so though your modular spaces, when people are like, oh, I'm interested, are they renting? Are they rent to own? Like, are there kind of structures in place? Like, maybe not set by you, because I mean, you're an architectural company. I mean, if you want to dabble into mortgaging as well, like, have that, you can. But like, I guess mortgages typically are handled by a third party as well. So what kind of structures exist in Nigeria to help with that, help solve that problem or bridge that gap, if any?
So we have a mortgage system in Nigeria. Okay. But sadly, it's a ridiculous mortgage system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have premiums of about 18 to 25% in some cases per annum. These are not mortgages, you know, they are death traps.
Yeah.
Nobody uses them, or, you know, except the people who can afford to. No one really uses them.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings us back to one of the problems we face. Unfortunately, and that's why I said Nigeria is interesting, Nigeria does not allow you to solve one problem at a time. Right? So in order for us to do our business, we have to sort of figure out how to become a microfinance bank.
Yeah.
Alongside, you know, and those are some of the challenges. Yes, there are people, you know, it's a very interesting season with, you know, a lot of startups in Nigeria and a lot of investment interest. And there's recent interest in, you know, prop tech and stuff like that. So yeah, we will eventually solve these problems. But that's one of the hurdles that we currently face.
How do
you get financing in the hands of people who want to live in these things?
Oh, interesting. We were kind of also wondering what kind of shaped you to go into the field you're in or start your business, seeing that it's very new and there are a lot of risks starting something new in Nigeria. So kind of your early years, like what was growing up for you like, and like kind of how did you find yourself in the position you are now?
Okay, this is a very long story.
Oh, we have time.
It's a very long story. Usually people say that, and then it's never really a long story.
Exactly.
So first of all, how did I get into architecture? I think I would have to give the credit to my uncle, my mom's sister's husband. He was an architect at the time. And when I was younger and I would go visit, he would take me to the office and just allow me to be in the office, which means that I would play with the models. I would try to make some things, obviously, and fail. But he just allowed me to be that. So I think that sparked the interest. And obviously, I could draw. So I had a talent to draw. And I would say this, if architecture was not the only thing my parents would allow me to do, I probably would have been an artist.
But you're Nigerian.
It was just one of those things, Nigerian parents, you have to use your art for something that's, you know, functional.
So you're not disgraced to the family.
I mean, but I love architecture and I fell in love with it very quickly. I went to school in Ghana, Kwame Nkrumah University of Science
Chale.
And Technology.
Mm-hmm.
You Charlie know. Beatins.
Oh my gosh, guys.
Yeah, so and Ghana was good. I think that The school I went to, KNUST, the architecture school was very good. We were UK accredited. There was a lot of like exchange between, exchange of ideas, you know, back and forth between credible universities in the UK and Ghana. But the spark for modular housing started in my third year. And it wasn't really housing, to be honest. I was challenged with a design program and I had to figure out a way to cram, I think, 10 tennis courts in a very small space. Oh, and I realized, okay, you know, there's a way you can stack them. If you can stack them at the right height, you can do that. And from that, I started stacking everything. So I would stack tennis courts in the design, and then I fell on housing. Now, the housing part, and I think why that's very important. I don't know why. I can't lie about that. I don't know exactly why I'm so passionate about it, but I feel like it's just one of those things that will not leave me alone, right? I feel like one of my callings on the planet is really to not necessarily solve the housing crisis. I think that's very, you know,
it's a big task.
But to be part of the solution, right? Mm-hmm. In whatever way, right? Because I think that housing is a basic need.
Yeah.
If someone has a comfortable place to rest their head, productivity is inevitable. Productivity is inevitable, then development is inevitable, and then everything gets better from there. So I think that, you know, just the way food is a basic, I think shelter is a basic, and trying to figure out how to bring shelter to the people who need it. So that's it. That's the long story summarized.
So at the time when you kind of discovered you really liked modular, because from my understanding, like kind of building and stacking homes is fairly new. Even like going through school as well, I had never really seen it until closer to the end of school. And like, I just finished school not so long ago. So for you at that time, had you seen examples of other people doing what you had kind of discovered or stumbled upon, like in school as well? Like, were there examples? Was modular architecture a thing at that time?
So I think modular architecture is old. It's actually quite old, but not in this way. So what people were calling modular architecture, where people were developing segments of building, right? So they would develop a wall and replicate that wall so that when they take it to site, they're putting walls in place.
But
modular as a complete product, like a complete housing unit or a complete, you know, hotel room or whatever it is relatively new. Seven Space started in 2013, started operating in 2014. But in, I think it was a couple of years later, 2016, was when, you know, the concept for Homey really started in my mind. Now, where I've been playing with it in Seven Space, you know, working on containers and working with, just experimenting with ideas. And unfortunately, I'm one of those people. I like experimenting with things. So that happened for a while. And I guess eventually it just stuck. It just stuck as one of those things that we were going to do.
Nice. That's pretty cool.
I was wondering, because I know it seems anyways that there is a lot of cost associated with this. Like, it's not really like a cheap, is it? Wait, correct me if I'm wrong.
You're not wrong at all.
Okay. So I wonder, like, where, at least when you started, you got funding from, and is there funding available by the government to solve the issue of affordable housing?
Oh, yeah, the government is, yeah, so I'll start with the government. The government is putting a lot of money into affordable housing, right?
Okay.
You know, there's last year, I think, or 2 years ago, they had said something about 500 billion. But the thing about Nigerian government is big government. So they are the ones that will build the houses.
Right? They want to contract it out themselves and et cetera.
They will build the houses, exactly. And in some cases, yeah, private companies bid for it and all of that. But I generally don't think that our production rate will ever solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We've moved up from producing 100,000 houses a year to about 250,000 houses in a year. That with a 20 million deficit, we have 80 years to go. Plus, we're never going to solve the problem because population will keep increasing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're basically far behind. So secondly, I think it's a very expensive venture. The startup capital for a lot of the experiments we did came from Seven Space, the architecture business.
Okay.
Right? So we would make money from there and invest in these ideas.
Yeah.
So that's really where most of the funding came from and has come from so far. Obviously, when we're talking to potential investors, we're out there trying to sell an idea that's very, very new. So I was saying earlier in 2016, when we started Homey, we launched and there are about three or four other companies that are notable in the world that were doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they all launched about 6 months later. So sometimes I like to tell myself that, you know, we're the first persons, first people to do it, but everybody has gone a lot further because they're in a different
country.
You know, and there's genuine interest. You see, the thing is, if there's genuine interest in solving a problem, especially if the government has that genuine interest in solving it, they'll be open to all types of ideas and actual solutions. I think that, you know, Nigeria is, I don't like to talk bad about Nigeria, what, you know. So we're working on a few things. I think that we're not working on anything.
No, I was about to actually, I was going to wait till you got to the end of that sentence and ask where exactly your optimism is coming from, especially as a person that lives in Nigeria and is trying to establish such an innovative company in Nigeria. Like, where is that hope coming from?
When everybody is like, they want to jackpot, like,
do you get?
Yeah.
You know, someone has to do it.
You're patriotic, eh?
Unfortunately, I say this all the time. All my siblings are out. Everybody is gone. I'm the
last
one
standing.
The only one is still there. You know, and I say this that, like I said, I can't explain it. But I'm realizing that you can solve a problem in a place and you don't have to be in the place. So I'm open to change. I'm open to...
So when you say change, you mean jackpot?
Not necessarily Jakba, but exploring. No, not Jakba. I think that Nigeria will always be my home.
Yeah.
In the sense that I'm not going to leave completely, but exploring opportunities outside Nigeria, within Africa and other places. Because I'm finding that a lot more people outside Nigeria are more willing to take chances with innovation. Nigeria is trying to close everything down, to be honest. You know, they're talking about regulating Netflix.
Oh, God.
I saw that.
You know, and it makes you wonder, you know, everyone else is moving forward.
We're going in the opposite direction.
We seem like we're going in the opposite direction. But the optimism comes from the fact that there's a need, there's a potential market, and the solution is there. It's just connecting the solution with investment.
I did have a question. So you had mentioned that, I guess, like you said, you were trying to be careful of using the word cheap when you were talking about like affordable housing. So like, I guess I was wondering, if it's not necessarily cheap, and I know you had mentioned that to actually buy a house is about $20,000, but if like in general, it's not cheap, but obviously it's like, you know, meant to be more affordable. I guess I was just wondering, like, with this whole idea, and it's not, I guess it's worth an idea, right? It's more an idea now, like it's not like you're essentially executing. What exactly is the demographic of people that you were looking at? So like, are you looking at, like, what's the word?
The income bracket.
Yes,
of
exactly.
People.
The income bracket. Thank you. You know, sometimes English escapes me, but yeah. What's the income bracket of people that you were looking at for, like, you know, your product?
Okay, so eventually we're looking at the lower class, right?
And also, how do you define lower class? Who is lower class to you?
Can
someone who's earning the minimum wage afford, like, you know, who is lower class? Like, what are your limits?
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do. So I think we have three phases, right? Phase one, we have to sell to the people who can buy it. Mm-hmm. Phase two, we reduce our prices when we can scale. Phase three, we find alternative ways to make the houses cheaper.
Okay.
Like I was saying, I think I'm going to take a very bold step and compare ourselves to Tesla. When Tesla started, they started by making very, very expensive electric cars. They used that to raise the capital to eventually build factories, you know, do an IPO and get money. Now that they have the factory, they can produce cars for cheaper.
Yeah.
I think that that's the only way we're eventually going to get there. So unfortunately, we have to start relatively more expensive. And so right now, the only people that can afford our houses fall within the middle or slight, you know, upper middle income brackets, to be very, very honest.
Okay.
But we also have, I guess, a slightly different challenge from most people. I said earlier that our end user, the people who want to use it, are not necessarily our target audience. So we sell these houses as investment opportunities. So for example, we're having conversations with people outside the country and we're saying, okay, if you have saved $20,000, buy a house, own one of these homes. We can put them in clusters. You make your money back off lease income. You know, it's what we're trying to do is turn it into a potential investment opportunity for people. So we're throwing out many ideas. You know, another eventual idea that we're talking to big corporations where, say, for example, an MTN would purchase maybe 100,000 houses, right? Put up the capital for 100,000 houses. But with controlled branding, they can advertise within those homes, right? So taking it to a place where the corporations take the weight of you the know,
initial
the cost,
cost, yeah,
the initial cost off, and then, you know, the populace pays back over a long period of time. And the reason why we think this might work is because these guys get to brand these estates. You know, MTN can have this as an MTN estate somewhere. Mm. This is a Globalcom estate somewhere. And so there's both brand identity, brand association for children, long-term brand association for the younger people. And then eventually, you know, they make their money back, or these people are tied to some contracts that, you know, make them use their products. The same way if you buy your phone, you're linked to a cell phone provider. You have to use maybe their data within the houses, or you have to use their internet provider within the homes. Something that ties them back to
the corporation, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay, yeah, no, that's brilliant. Yeah, that's brilliant. No, because,
yeah, when I was watching the video, I saw the plot of land. Like, you said it was one plot of land and that you could fit 10 of those container houses on just that plot. And I think that in Nigeria, anyways, like when I was living there, there were always all these, like, there's land and there's uncompleted buildings.
Like, or shacks.
Or shacks, exactly. This is like a chance to have those houses, like proper houses on those lands that people don't have money to build on yet.
It's such a cool concept.
Yeah. It is. I have a question though. And this has been looming, like it's been a question I wanted to get to since we started the conversation. Honestly, since I started looking into like the product. But the thing is, I wonder what the cultural acceptance of these houses is, because, you know, I think because it's such a big shift from what we're used to, it's kind of hard to get your mind around it. I feel like it's very like, it's a very specific kind of person that would be like, yeah, I want to live in like a tiny house or a container house. Because, okay, so like a while ago, I was having a conversation with a friend and she's a radical thinker. Like, she believes that, like, because of the population growth in the world, people living, especially in metropolitan cities, people living in like single houses are kind of selfish and are not thinking about everyone else. She believes everyone should live in an apartment building, essentially, because like in places like, I think it's Japan, where the housing is like people live in like boxes, basically, and like it's normal. Yeah. So she believes like we should have that mindset. Yeah. But then
Nigerians don't like to be in the same room as their kitchen. Yeah,
it's even like, okay, let's take it away from Nigerians. It's me, like, even growing up.
Okay, well, like, that's not you're Nigerian.
I am Nigerian. That's fair. but I guess, like, even like, just I guess personalizing it, as she was saying, oh, everybody should live in an apartment. I'm like, but what if I don't want to? Kind of thing. So it's like, is there a mental barrier, like, we need to, like, how are we going to sell this culturally if it's going to be a thing that has to, like, you know, solve the housing crisis, you know? Yeah.
Okay, so, like, containers, yes, definite cultural barrier. We've faced this for years. Just because, you know, the people we thought we were trying to sell to have that mindset, you know, things that you guys were describing, you know, I don't want my kitchen to be in my living room.
I want a mansion.
You know, I want a bigger space, but they're not our clients.
And so
the people we're selling to, you know, there's this saying, beggars don't have choice. Unfortunately, the people we're selling to already live this way. You see, the model that we're trying to adapt with, you know, renting land is not a new model. You know, I learned this from, you know, spending time with my bricklayers and the people who used to work for me. They do this on a regular. The shacks that you're talking about, they come in clusters, they rent the land. They live on it. When their rent is up, they carry their shack, they move somewhere else. Mm. So I thought about that and I said, their housing typology is obviously abysmal, right? It's terrible. It's not fit for purpose. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a young population that can't, there's no way as an earning Nigerian, you can actually afford a house anywhere decent in Lagos.
Mm.
You can't.
Yeah.
There's not, unless you're doing something that's extraordinary. There's no earning capacity to eventually be able to buy a 30 million naira house. Where are you going to be able to? Right?
Yeah.
And so we had to innovate and figure out how to get there. Now, because the end product is not containers, the container that you guys saw was a prototype.
Oh, was
prototype
it? Okay.
Test the market, okay. Right? The end product is eventually being able to flat pack and factory assemble whatever modular typology we want.
Okay.
You know, the designs are still in process. When we get there, we think we would have overcome the cultural barrier. But right now, currently, what we do is that these houses, these container houses, can be clad to look like a regular building.
Yeah.
It was just presented in its raw form because I'm a romantic architect and I like things in their raw form. But we could cover it with stone, we could cover it with brick, we could cover it with wood, we could cover it with, you know, plasterboard, anything to make it look as regular as the individual wants it.
Okay, that's fair. I guess there could also, because like a lot of things that are new and stuff just need to be made regular almost, because like right now, because it's so new, I guess that's where like the mental barrier comes in. But I feel like even like, for example, I was also having this conversation about like, you know, Facebook Meta and stuff and like the Meta space and everything. And it's so crazy to us right now. We're like, oh, virtual reality and whatever. But like in years from now, this is probably going to be the norm. It just needs to be made normal.
I agree 100%. I was watching on CNN yesterday that, you know, someone sold a plot of land in the metaverse for $4.3 million.
A plot of land in the metaverse?
I'm so sorry, what?
People are selling land. I even think it's a brilliant opportunity.
It's like for NFTs.
Yeah, the NFTs.
No, exactly. I'm so sorry. I don't understand this one. NFTs, I'm able to wrap my head around it a little bit. This one, I can't.
Yeah, I don't get it.
People are building the virtual world.
Yeah.
And okay. They're monetizing it.
Wait, virtual. So like you're not actually living there though.
So what it is you're especially, I think the thing is people are trying to build demand for it. You're trying to get in on it as quickly as possible.
So that you can live there virtually.
So that if it blows now, you started off with a low.
Yeah, so I think what people are doing is they're building the metaverse and they're monetizing it. And why not? I think architects should jump on this and start designing houses and turning them into NFTs and selling them.
Yeah.
I feel like this one just be a whole different conversation, because the amount of questions I have will make a whole different podcast. So
I'm not an expert, so I probably can't answer them.
It's actually better for behavior, because like you have to have a lot of money to start like investing that much money into like something virtual.
A
like,
virtual space.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's always rich people that start stuff.
But I did have a question. So I know we've been talking about like leasing land and like, you know, and I guess you also mentioned that was like part of the expense. But I guess I was also wondering, have you guys, and honestly, this might just be like me just thinking out of the, like just out there, but have you guys ever thought of like leasing like water space? So, and I mean, the reason why I thought about that was because like when you think of like places like Makoko, where like they have just a bunch of
like a Venice.
Yeah, exactly, like a Venice, but like a more sanitary place than Makoko, like, you know, a place that actually is like more structured, like, you know, that is not as abysmal as that is. So is that something that you've kind of thought of, like leasing water space or even just like redoing what Makoko is? And I mean, obviously, not to like take away from every single thing happening there, but yeah, just like an idea. Is that a thing that y'all ever considered? Like, do you think that it would even make sense or even be even more affordable than leasing land, since that's kind of one of your bigger expenses, I guess?
Yes. So I think that's, first of all, brilliant. What's interesting is that I actually did some work in Makoko in 2013, a while ago. So, you know, it's a focus area, and I think it was part of the journey to getting here.
Mm-hmm.
We have a design that floats on water. However, it's actually a lot more expensive to build the floating versions than the landed version. So, you know, you might be saving money on the water leasing cost. And I don't even know that you can lease water in Lagos, by the way. But on the water leasing cost, you would be spending the extra on trying to create a floating raft that the houses can sit on and things like that. So it's right now, we haven't worked out the engineering, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that we've done. But I think that it's a good idea. I'm very big on preservation, right? I think Makoko is a brilliant place.
Yeah.
I just think it needs better organization, better, you know, sanitation.
Yeah.
Because that is, like you said, literally Venice. You know, I think that the innovation even behind the way these houses are built, you know, if one could study them, you would realize that it could apply to almost everybody. Makoko literally, unfortunately, is one of the places that people will say doesn't flood because it's already on water. So in a weird way, it works, and it works for the people there. And if the people there will not leave Makoko for anything, it's a brilliant settlement.
And I think another thing that came up, I'm not sure if it's something people really think about, but it's more, and this is like life, like the life cycle of the properties or the homes you're kind of putting in place. So because, I mean, you made a distinction, it's affordable and not cheap. And also there's conversations going on about trying to kind of reduce the cost over time. So I'm wondering, like, in terms of quality of materials, for example, because that might be something that maybe, I don't know if, I mean, I'm not really like into real estate, but I'm not sure if that's something that people looking to invest kind of look at as well. Like, you know, do you kind of have like a scope for like, okay, we can't go below this quality or level of standards in terms of materials? And yeah, like what kind of standards do you have in place for these homes and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think, first of all, brilliant question, because that was one of the conversations we had to have with ourselves early on in the business. Are we trying to be cheap? Are we trying to be affordable? We definitely have a standard. And, you know, with what you guys saw on Tyre Noise video, we try to use very good quality materials, highest grade, to be honest, materials. However, we're hoping that with scale, that's where we can start reducing our prices. So we want to be as detailed as being able to factor how many screws go into the house, how many nails are used, the exact number of cable length, and every single thing, such that with scale, the economies of scale, we are saving money in the long run. With companies that have gotten as big as Rivian, Tesla, most of these guys who are actually modularizing production today, that's where the savings come from. You know, just like, you know, when you're, if you're buying wholesale, it's cheaper than buying retail. And that's what we're hoping we can eventually do, because we can't drop our standard in terms of quality of materials and hope that we would maintain the same clientele that we're hoping to keep or to have.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it has to work.
You guys should market to Wizkid, you know?
What?
Why Wizkid?
Get Wizkid to...
Oh, it's true. A brand ambassador, generally.
Like
a,
yeah, basically. Because it's like, you know the thing about selling, because like he said, the current clientele are people who are not able to afford it. But you know this thing where rich people jump on things that poor people like like Kanye West's like whole fashion thing where he's wearing ripped clothing and everything is like, you know, very muddy color and stuff like that.
Poor people,
no, like for real. It's actually a thing. Think yeah, so like, have you thought about strategies to kind of like
what Matilda's like getting Wizkid.
Brand ambassador?
Yo,
to advertise to Wizkid.
Well, we have soft strategies, but we don't have Pepsi money yet. We can't quite approach the likes of Wizkid. However, we do have softer strategies in place. I think for next year, we're hoping that we can establish a couple of these homes by ourselves, by raising the capital and then having a bunch of, you know, B-list. They're going to hate it when I say this, but B-list celebrities or social media influencers actually use and then.
Not you're already cutting them off before you sign them on.
I know.
Imagine Wizkid doing a walkthrough and he's like, hi guys, this is my container house. I'm doing like a tour almost, like MTV Cribs.
It would be brilliant. You know, it would be.
MTV Cribs.
But make it a
container house version.
Yeah.
Version, exactly. It would be brilliant. I'm also, at some point next year also, I'm going to, you know, be putting some.
Okay, we're actually giving you, what do you call it, advertising.
Advertising ideas, though.
Ideas. You paid for our services.
Africalypso Consultants. Have you Consultancy Limited? Think about it.
I did have a quick question. Do you live in one of your tiny homes?
No, I don't currently, but I did for, I think, 3 months last year.
Ooh. Oh, okay. Did you like that experience? Like, how was that for you?
Loved the experience. And obviously, I'm not going to say anything else.
Are you just saying it? Is it because you own this stuff?
Is that love? 100% will recommend.
To be honest, very, very honest. Part of it is sentimental, because it's a very, I guess, surreal thing to live in something you've built, something that was in your head, right? You know, something that you brought out. So actually live and interact in it is, first of all, very different. Mm-hmm. But secondly, I think we did a good job in designing it. So I'm not just big on just the production part of it, but design is a very big part of me. And I think that we did a very, very good job in utilizing the space within that small environment. you don't feel like you're in a small space. You know, a container is 2.4 meters wide. In our container, it feels like 3.6.
Wait, sorry, what's that in feet? Actually, let me, I just did the
conversion. Does that mean something to you though?
No, it means something to me because I think in feet, like it's crazy, but I think in feet because I think in my height. So like when somebody says something is like 6 feet, I'm like, oh, I'm like 5 feet, what does that look like?
Legit.
Exactly. Yeah. So sorry, I'm just going to do the conversion. Sorry, go ahead. You were saying something important. Oh, thank you. Okay.
It's 8 feet in terms of the one bedroom home is 8 feet wide by 40 feet long. Right.
Oh,
But by the time we're done with our design, we have certain protrusions that you wouldn't notice from the inside that actually add, you know, a couple of feet, about 3-4 feet to the width of the container. So there are a bunch of, you know, design elements, little space saving things that we threw in there. You can pull out your dining table and push it back into one of the cabinets.
Mm, makes sense.
You know, so it's just, you know, you can move your wardrobe forward now and have a study table at the back of it and then push it back. So yeah, it's really just pushing the envelope on what you can do with a small space. And Japan does well.
Do you have any plans on living in one permanently?
No. No, I don't. And the reason is this. I have to be honest. My functional needs will eventually be bigger than the space, right? Mm-hmm. We classify our homes as starter homes. Yeah, we classify them as starter homes, really. The idea is this is the home you get before your dream home. Which is why, you know, as part of the ethos, you know, we try to call it a home as a friend. You know, there's a play in the name homie right there, right? And the idea is this is not your final resting place, but you need a place for now. So why don't you get on your way there? And for the first time, real estate is actually marketable in a way that it has never been. With a modular house like this or a single unit productized house, you can sell to someone in Kaduna even if you live in Lagos. You can sell to someone in Ghana. You can resell to someone in London, you know, as long as they can pay the shipping cost for the unit. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, is, you know, it transforms real estate in a way that I don't think there are many products out there doing. There's one product I follow very closely called Casita, and another one called Koda. These are products, Scandinavian companies, doing very similar things to what we're doing, but they've been able to scale. And so it's easy to see the trajectory of what's possible, knowing that it's been done and the adaption of it is out there.
And do you see the government ever buying your units, like kind of to solve that? Because, you know, you said or you mentioned the government is producing homes at a rate of, right now you said 250,000 homes this year. But then do you ever see them kind of looking to your product as a viable solution?
I'm about to burst into tongues and say amen. Because, yes.
Love to see it.
I hope that they will be the biggest clients because they really are the only ones, you know, apart from big corporations.
Yeah,
that can
they
make
need
it possible.
To be on board. Mm-hmm. You know, big corporations can provide the funding to build the homes. Government has to be on board to provide the land. Because we need
land.
I know
one day wake up to cancel it.
Exactly. But even if they cancel it for the first time, the homes can be moved. So, you know.
Hey, yeah. He said they have a contingency plan.
But we hope that they wouldn't, because, you know, it's lives at stake. Sorry?
Is that a thing for startups in Nigeria? Because, like, generally, these days, like, the government just wakes up and they're like, okay, ban
you
this thing and that. So I wonder, like, does everyone always just think of these things?
You have to have a contingency plan. But, you know, I think that wisdom is also very, very profitable, right? If I'm supposed to be honest. And what I mean by wisdom is partnership with the government. You cannot expect to do anything productively in Nigeria without, you know, extending an arm. And this is not to ignore everything that the government is, but it's like having a bad parent and deciding you're not going to talk to them again. It doesn't solve your problems. You figure out how to deal with bad situations rather than...
Sorry. Imama was like, no. I was like, no. Because then you don't have parents.
Exactly. And I think that's basically how as long as you are Nigerian, living in Nigeria, right? While you raise your voice and complain about the issues, while you don't keep quiet, while you keep speaking up at it, I think that it's important to constantly look for lines of partnership that actually move the people forward. It is not a selfish agenda. It's not about me, right? And I think that I've had to get myself to a place where I think about it that way. If you don't dialogue with the solution providers, no matter how bad they are or how good they are, you're never going to be able to provide the solution to people that need it. And as long as those people exist, then this is a conversation that has to be had. You know, we have to, I think so. I just think that we have to be able to differentiate between our emotional likes and dislikes versus functional needs. And that's how development has happened everywhere else in the world. You know, two sides coming to dialogue to move forward.
Other solution. We can have like a revolution and then pack everybody that is there currently and then, you know, have a better government and then work with
them. That would be awesome. But you know that? That would be awesome. But what you just described is like a 10-year journey. Because after revolution is building up again.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true.
And who wants to be there for the... Nigerians are wild, though. We don't want to see that fight. You know, we're actually not ready. Nobody wants it. And I don't even think that we want a country that would experience civil war twice. Mm. You know, in terms of life, in terms of... Because the people who we're trying to kick out will leave the country. They all have private jets. They're not going to be there. We might kick them out and a new group of people will take power. But the truth is, the person who will take power again
will be the same kind of person.
It will be this, or worse, someone who's hungrier than you are, someone who's not going to fight the fights that we're going to fight, someone who's ready to carry a gun and spill blood on the street. Mm-hmm. That's what has happened at the end of every revolution. So unfortunately, you know, if we want it, you just, and pray to God that, you know, they all have very full and timely lives, you know, where they depart to their heavenly fathers at the right time.
Which one?
Honestly,
of them?
Because they're not leaders? They're refusing to depart.
That's what I was going to say. See, this is
in a country where the average age of death is
life expectancy.
50.
Yeah.
Life expectancy. Yes. Thank you. That English.
Has said that?
Death.
50. Why are some people living till 90? Like, I just don't understand. Like,
I'm not eating the same things.
It's not the same.
It's not the same food.
Their life expectancy is not from Nigeria. It's from somewhere else.
No, I was watching this YouTube video of this very she's a popular. Like a rich guy's daughter, right? She has a YouTuber and stuff.
Do I know exactly who you're talking about?
Oh, you know exactly who I'm talking about. I'm just not going to name names.
That's why I was like, which rich guy? Okay.
I'm not going to name names. It's okay. Do your research. So, and then he was like, this is what daddy eats. And it was all greens. Like, they eat their vegetables. They're not going anywhere.
They're not living our lives. I'm screaming. I'm telling you, it's not the same.
Nigeria, that I heard beans are expensive.
Even we are not living the lives that the average Nigerian is living.
That's true.
That is very true.
There are many levels to this
struggle.
To this struggle.
God save us.
I'm actually skipping. But wait, back to our housing topic. It's of this depressing government topic. Oh my gosh, I feel like every time we talk about the government, it just kind of gets into a thing where it's like, we all just like sigh at the end, like, wow.
I hope that somebody dies.
Wait, okay, Hadiza,
pause.
I'm not with Hadiza, please.
I didn't say anything. I just said somebody. I mean, people die every day.
Okay. That's all. I did not say it.
I'm screaming. But I did have a quick question. I was wondering, in the design of your houses, was sustainability something that, like, I guess, like, you had thought about, like, I said thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Was it something that, I guess, like, you had thoughts about, like, when it comes, like, design, production, all that fun stuff? Like, were you ever thinking of, like... How do you say those things? How do you say, is it negative carbon footprint?
You know,
I'm trying to say, like, is it like zero? Should be zero carbon footprint? You guys get the gist, though. Like, reducing population. Thank you. Was that something that kind of like drove that idea? Or was it something that you even considered? Because, I mean, I know like Africa doesn't really produce as much when it comes to like, you know, the general...
Carbon
emissions in the world. But like, I mean, I think like in Nigeria, there definitely is a lot of waste and a lot of like, there's still stuff that we can do on our end. So I guess I was just wondering if that was something that did drive you or if that's just
we've not reached the Maslow's, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We've not reached it yet.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So yes, but the truth is, it's always a thought. The mere fact that we're using containers, or the mere fact that eventually we want to start productizing the houses, you know, when we get to that phase, is going to be sustainable inevitably, right? Mm. But is it the foreground thought? No. Sustainability is is expensive. I like to say that, you know, let's develop African solutions for African people and African problems. We're not yet at the place where negative carbon footprints can be at the forefront of our minds. Mm-hmm. We're having dialogues with countries who have 100 years, 200 years of using coal and developing their economies and infrastructure.
And slavery.
You know, so exactly. Slavery and all sorts of, you know, all sorts of natural resources. They've used everything. Mm-hmm. And so now they're trying to, and that this is just my opinion, right? I think that, yes, let's get to that place where, you know, the entire world eventually is zero carbon emitting. But for now, I don't think that thinking about it as holistically as that is going to solve our problems. There are certain things that we need, and we need those things first. You know, we can't start flying before we can walk. We're not even walking as a country, or as a continent, really.
Fair enough.
So let's get there. But yes, sustainability is part of it. As much as possible, we're trying to work on, you know, changing the insulation we use inside our buildings and trying to use recycled plastics. So there are a bunch of things that we will eventually do. And we started to do, but it's not at the forefront. The forefront is let's get homes to the people. Let's get good quality, safe homes to the people. And then after that, then we can start, you know, talking about sustainability. But there are other ways we can apply it outside the design of the homes. Like, so for example, water harvesting, we can put in the general complexes.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other things that we can, you know, design
What's water harvesting?
Like,
so harvesting rainwater. So rather than letting your rainwater just go to waste, you can collect it and then treat it. You can treat the water that you use. Say, for example, the brown water used to wash plates and things like that can be used for flushing the toilet, things like that.
In Mama's question, actually, because the thing is, there's this idea that if you're building sustainably, you're actually building cheaper to some degree. Like, I know this architect.
I used to think that. But yeah, sorry,
like,
ahead.
It's not necessarily always true, but
isn't
there's
it
this,
usually like in the long run, though?
And sometimes short. So there's this lady who does, her name is Chinwe Ohajikura. I think her concept was also kind of also for low income housing as well. But then she, I don't know if she's building net zero energy homes, but then kind of with the way her homes are set out such that they just generally use less energy just by existing.
Mm-hmm.
And in a country where we do pay for energy, like government doesn't necessarily provide a stable source of energy, did kind of reduce her, I guess, her
energy use
and production of the actual house itself and stuff.
So I don't know that I don't know how she's doing it. I think I have to say that. I know that it's possible, for example, with the choice of materials, like we say, for example, if you're using LED lighting, you know, you're saving on, you know, power consumption. If you're using different materials, you're basically saving, you know, using wood more sustainable in the usage of the material. But I don't know how you're going to scale. And that's the truth. If you're ever at a point where you want to produce 10,000 homes, you're going to need power.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to need power from some form of generator.
And consistency.
Yeah. And if you do get to the point where you can afford solar, your solar has to have a backup because the sun is not
all the time. Yeah.
You know, so I don't even think the world is at a place where they can do that.
Yeah.
In terms of energy consumption, you can definitely drive it down. One of our big plans is to take people off the grid, for example. And in more sustainable countries and more developed countries, you can actually sell to the grid, right? But in Nigeria, you can't. So I'm hoping that we get to a place where, you know, our homes are solar powered with backup, you know, batteries, you know, being able to partner with bigger companies to actually supply batteries for power for the homes, you know, as an inverter system. And we get to that place where we're not necessarily so dependent on a non-functioning grid.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. Every time somebody says take people off the grid, I literally always think of, like, put people in hiding. Like, when you said that, I was like, wait, why would you want to start, like, servicing criminals? But then it made sense. I was like, oh, okay.
Criminals.
I see what you're saying. Honestly, I figured it out once they're saying bad. I was like, okay, I get it right now. I watched too much Blacklist, guys, clearly. I'm sorry. Martin, I feel like you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because like everything sounds so, you know, you're speaking very good English. You're speaking very educated, but the reality of Nigeria doesn't allow, like, what really are the realities of bringing these ideas into Nigeria, like being a startup in Nigeria with like such like outside like thoughts and like new thoughts and everything? What really are the real challenges you face in Nigeria? Because everything sounds so nice, like you sound so optimistic. You're like, yeah, hopefully we can start selling back to the grain, blah blah. I'm like, Nigeria? Oh yeah. It sounds very hopeful and everything, and it's good to have hope. Like, let me not say it like I'm against. I believe Nigeria can actually do things, but I just wonder what the real reality is. What does that look like day to day, and like
day to day,
starting this even to where you guys are right now?
Day to day, I think you really can't see beyond the day in Nigeria, and that's the truth.
Okay.
We're also approaching an election cycle. Anything can happen within the country. I'm optimistic because, like I said earlier, someone has to do it. But there's always a hack. And the hack around it is, if you look at most of the successful startups in Nigeria, they are non-Nigerian companies resident in Nigeria, which means the American company is being funded by America, resident in Nigeria. There's a hack around it. There's always a way that you can figure out how to solve the problem. And it wouldn't be a problem if there were no challenges, right? I think it's just the challenge I've chosen.
Are you excited? Does that excite you, though? Because some people actually are excited by the chaos in Nigeria.
I'm not excited, though. I'm a peace-loving individual. I've been through cycles. I've been through many cycles. I've quit this thing many times. I've said I'm not doing it again. You know, I'm a Christian, so I've told God, you know, you burdened me with something so stupid. I'm not doing it again. You know, I've had all sorts of back and forths with the idea. So this is not to say that Nigeria has not broken me in many situations. However, it has to be done. Every time that I look back and I think about, you know, the people, and I happen to work with a lot of underprivileged people, or, you know, I would say lower income earners because of the nature of my work. I think those conversations have kept me going. I also have another company that's done stuff with, you know, Lagos State in trying to provide social solutions for commercial roadside operators. So I think it's passionate. It's just something I'm passionate about. So that's where the optimism comes from. And I think I look beyond the country. And if I need to run, then we run.
Then we run. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the safest country to jackpot to? Sorry.
I am crying.
I'm just going to go back to my second home. I just
Ghana.
I'm telling you, man.
What made you move back, like, initially? Like, is it because Nigeria is, like, as you said, your home and, like, what you know and everything?
Oh, well, by the time I was leaving Ghana, I was done. I was tired. I was so tired of Ghana that I had no choice.
Don't let the brothers hear you.
I was there for 7 years.
Is it?
I was there for 7 years. So by the time I left, I think that I was very ready for Nigeria and Lagos. Wait. And I wouldn't say, sorry?
No, I was just going to say, like, what about Ghana made you tired? Like, I heard that it's pretty similar to, like, Nigeria.
Back and forth. The better is arguable. They have a better public image.
We talk too much.
No, and there's reason for it. The reason is because they have a leader who's doing some things that are, you know, shifting the world in that direction. So they are doing, they're making some good public and international relations. But internally, I don't know that they're much different.
Wow.
Interesting.
I'm very, very careful to say this, but one of the things that I think I got tired about is the temperament of Ghanaians versus the temperament of Nigerians.
I've heard this so much.
Temperament?
Yeah.
In terms of their character. And so at some point, I just felt we need a little more speed.
I'm telling you, you like
spice. Snow for me.
I'm telling you, like the chaos in Nigeria. Just say it.
I don't like the chaos, but I understand it.
Actually, speaking about that, I'm assuming that, like, obviously, you live in Lagos, right?
Yes, I do.
So would you live in any other state in Nigeria? Like, is that a thing that you see yourself doing?
As long as I have mobility and access, I would say I can live in Abuja sure. I could do
soft life.
To be honest, it's only Lagos or Abuja.
I'm actually screaming.
No.
Do you see what I'm saying?
What Yoruba states are there? Ekiti,
Ibadan, all of those places. Nah.
Even now,
honestly, I think you know what. I do think Matilda might be right.
I
do think
everything is pointing in this direction.
No. It's not. See, here's the question, right? You know, you guys are in Canada, right? There's no chaos in Canada. But would you move to the suburbs?
It's not racism. That's not for me.
It's not really because I mean, for instance, like I actually kind of moved to. I mean, some people call it the village. It's not the village.
Imama is the village. Imama is Saskatchewan.
I moved to the west of Canada. Yeah. And honestly, it's not that terrible. Like, it's like I actually don't like. It seems like you said,
I'm joking. I swear. That was insensitive. I'm sorry.
I'm just trying to say that it's cheaper here, and as long as I have mobility, like as long as like, I enter planes anytime I want, honestly, I don't think it's like, you know, that much terrible of an idea.
But Saskatchewan is a city still.
Okay. You need mobility. If I move to Ekiti, I can't get to where
but
the money
is. But you said that you're never thinking about moving to Ekiti. That's the problem.
I already know the transport situation.
But there's mobility from Bini City. There's mobility
to where,
from there.
How? When? 8 hours
flights.
On the road?
You can fly.
I'm saving money on rent. I'm spending it on flights.
Do you get?
I mean, it depends on how often you're trying to go to Lagos. Honestly, I think if we sat down and we had a brainstorming session,
the money is in Lagos. There's nowhere else to get it. The money is in Lagos. That's where my customers
are. You Jebu?
What?
Where did that come from?
And I am Jebu.
Because you said is in Lagos. See, that's
Imama, as a Jebu person, I am offended.
You'll be all right.
I can't be trying to raise money to do a business and then move to Ekiti. I can't be trying to raise money to sustain a business. And this is not to say, bear in mind, Ekiti is doing great things.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But isn't their governor the one that is currently doing well? What's his name? I can't remember, but I don't know.
Makinde, right?
Makinde, yeah.
But no, Makinde is not. That's all your.
Not me just mixing all of it together. Sorry, go ahead.
You know, I think that it's not that they're not doing great stuff, but it's like you have a higher population of the people who can afford what you're trying to sell in Lagos. You know, it's like, you know, wanting to be an actor and then moving to Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. I'm screaming. Fair enough. You know what? I get it.
You know, like, stay in the place that would feed you.
But you know what? You know where I think would actually be kind of really cool for, like, you know, what you're building? And honestly, Imama's consultancy agency.
No, Imama, why are you making it a thing? This is Africa Lipso Consultancy. Thank you.
I think, somewhere in the east, like Onitsha, like, you know, Aba, like places like that. Because, like, I feel like there's also a huge population. And I think, I'm Igbo. I mean, my name's Imama, so you probably already know this, but. I mean, I do think, like, I think Igbo people are kind of more, and this is not saying anything. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're more adventurous. Like, they're more, like, open to, like, trying things like this. And, yeah, I just feel like they'll be more open to, like, trying a product like this.
Innovation as well.
Exactly. Innovation. And, like, we don't even know. Like, it can even be a thing where it's, like, they might even, like, you know, turn some of their stores into, like, stuff like that, like into like what you're doing, like try to make your product a store, like things like that. Long story short, I just think that even people are kind of really like adventurous and like, you know, would be up for something like that. So lucky you could actually move to Onitsha. That's also a potential option as well.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think there's definitely a market there. We're actually having conversations on a project right now in Enugu. So yes, for sure. Oh. I know that the East is definitely a place that's going to have a lot of adoption.
Yeah.
But the reason why I would not move there is pretty much the same thing. It's pretty much the same reason. I don't know the East, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I can have a business in the East. I can have partners in the East. And I can, you know, work with people in the East. Like I said, I'm an introvert as well. So I like what I like. I like my home. I like to stay indoors. And I like to interact with, you know. But I do not like the kids.
Wait, okay. You don't like what, sorry?
The chaos.
I do not like the chaos.
Oh, the chaos. Yeah, no, we're definitely just teasing. Like, I'm sure, like, a lot of people just, they stay in Lagos and they just don't like that chaos. It's just a thing where it's like, it's home. And like you said, there's more opportunities. Yeah, so, yeah, no, we totally get it.
I think my last question was, I think somewhere in this conversation, you mentioned that you realized that even just like outside Nigeria, there's a market for these things. When you say outside Nigeria, do you mean outside Nigeria, but within Africa, or do you mean just generally?
We've gotten interest across board. I think one of the biggest marketing pushes, and it was, to be fair, it wasn't even planned, was the Tangerino video. We've gotten contacted from people from Spain, France, the US, but predominantly African countries. So there's interest across board. I think the most exciting thing for people outside Africa is how cheap it is, because they're like, what? $20,000?
But you have to ship it, no? Like,
yeah, but people are shipping containers all the time.
Imama,
you're a container.
You know?
I'm joking, sir, yeah.
You know? So shipping is really not, you know, the craziest hurdle that people have to face. But once again, we're actually not yet at a place where we can mass produce the way that we need to, especially if we want to put out an international standard product. So it's growing, but it's not exactly there yet where I can say that. So, for example, the building codes in the UK are different. The building codes in America are different. And so serving international markets means that we have to be working with their own codes. Yes. And right now, we're working with West African codes within the area that we can actually supply. And then eventually, as we scale, and hopefully this happens in the next 5 years, we're everywhere, including the metaverse.
To the moon.
Honestly, this metaverse conversation.
It's stressing you.
It's actually stressing me because I don't understand it. I don't like things I don't understand.
You and I both.
Yeah.
Last question for me is, what do you see the future of housing of Nigeria looking like, just generally?
This is a stretch. I really have to see. I don't know what I see, but I know what I hope. What I hope for the future of housing in Nigeria, and I think in time frames, in the next 5 years, is basically more of a market, which means that we would have solved some problems around housing financing. And we would have solved some problems around the ability to produce in scale. And this is me saying that I don't care whether my company is the only company that's doing it. I think anyone who can should try and do it, because there's a real need. But my second and my biggest hope, more long term, is to see the Homie logo everywhere, to see it in as many places as a symbol of housing. You know, the fact that, you know, people have this logo somewhere means that there are a ton of people who are living a little more comfortably than they were living before. And so that's what I hope for. That's what I hope for Nigeria. And to be honest, West Africa, because the problem is almost the same across the world. It's different numbers and different stats, but everywhere has a housing shortage. The UK is screaming, for example, because they have a housing shortage and they're buying modular houses from Dubai. So, it's happening across board, and it's... Hopefully, Nigeria would not have the highest numbers in the next 10 years.
That is lit. Thank you.
Lit. Thank you. And thank you. If people wanted to check out like just what you do, where can they find either you or like the company information?
So on social media, it's 7thSpace. We're predominantly on Instagram. And then our website is 7th-space.com.
Perfect.
Yeah, so you can reach us. You can find us there.
This was a very interesting conversation. Yeah. You're super smart though, like, because there's a lot of like, I guess this also comes with like experience, but there's a lot of ideas that I wouldn't have considered at all that you brought up. And I'm like, okay, it makes sense, but you're in the industry. So, but kudos to what you're doing.
Yeah. And you're really doing really solving an issue, a problem. And I feel like it's really cool whenever like people just like, put themselves out there to like solve a problem, no matter how uncomfortable it is.
Yeah.
Honestly, I love that.
Remember,
yeah,
we said this on one of our other episodes that it's actually a thing. Sorry, I know we were wrapping up and then I bring up another conversation.
No, it's cool. Fine.
Someone has brought up the fact that, like, you know, as Nigerians specifically, I guess maybe even Africans generally, we're not brought up to like solve problems because Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like, we are brought up to like, chase money kind of thing rather than solve problems.
Do you mind if I put a spin on that just a little bit?
Okay.
We do solve problems. We just solve our own problems. Very personalized.
Oh, like, yeah.
Orientation. And I think that's because of an unfortunate environment. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, Maslow's, you know, hierarchy of needs. If you don't have, you're only going to look to get. And that, unfortunately, is where we are. The rest of the world has evolved beyond solving those basic problems. And that's why innovation seems to be, you know, very rampant around. Yes. But yes, you're right. We do chase money, but it's because we're hungry.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
You can't actually blame anyone, but...
I don't think you can.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. It's a terrible, terrible culture. Very, very terrible. Because people seem to respect money more than honor, all these things that, you know, are supposed to be valuable.
Yeah. It keeps us where we are, honestly, because...
It does.
Like,
it does.
Abroad solutions aren't always going to apply to us. For example, people are doing what you're doing all around the world, but they're not doing it to solve our specific need, right?
Exactly.
So a company like yours in Nigeria is so necessary. But yes, you're not going to see a lot of it because it's hard. Like,
It's really uncomfortable and hard.
Oh, yeah.
Just like,
I don't think you stressed enough the uncomfortability, to be honest, in this.
Hard.
Yeah.
Let me stress it now. It's very, very hard.
Because honestly, I can't lie. If they told me that the first one I have to buy is so summer, I say, it's okay, I'm not doing anymore.
Let's go,
let's go. Let me go to my architecture. Shebi, this person needs house. I'll go and build your own house. I'll collect for them.
Shebi, exactly.
I mean, it's hard, but fortunately, you know, I'm trying to be wise about it. The company is not the only thing we do, you know. So
yes,
we're hoping that, you know, we can keep ourselves afloat at the very least, and then very soon, you know, I have a lot of hope. I'm sure
profitable.
I've shared this a lot.
Yeah.
Very soon, we would be able to do exactly what we think we need to do.
Yeah. Our fingers are crossed for you, like, honestly.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
And thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Is he gone?
No,
is he
we
gone?
Need an outro.
Okay. Is he gone?
I do not know how to be gone. I'm just going to close it and hopefully I'm gone.
I'm finished.
Bye.
Okay. All right. So thanks everyone for listening to this very interesting episode.
Sorry.
Oh my gosh, I dissolved.
Sorry.
But yeah, thank you so much everyone for listening to this episode. It's been a really fun conversation. Before we go, we wanted to remind you guys again to send in your listener letters, questions, anything before we record our Christmas episode, because we want to make a whole episode out of it. Thank you to everyone that sent in stuff already. Our links are going to, like, where you can reach out to us is going to be in the description notes. But yeah, it's pretty much africalypsopodcast.com/contact. Or you can reach out to us on our social media, DM us or anything. Just send a listener letter. Yeah, we want to know, like, pretty much, like, what you guys think about the podcast. We want to answer any questions, any dilemmas you guys might have. So please send it to us. We want to, like, hear from you guys. We want an interactive episode and, like, just get it, the personality of the people that listen to us pretty much on that episode. Thanks for everyone that has been rolling with us. Those Spotify wrapped up things started coming through.
Exactly. Really touched our hearts.
It really, really
did.
It was
so cute.
Shout out to you guys for rolling it with us this year. We're almost at the end of the year. So happy. Omicron be gone. Yeah, etc.
Omarion.
But yeah. All right, you guys. We'll catch you guys next week. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Bye.
Peace out. Have a great week.